And again, we continue our extended news at noon, and we do appreciate you joining us for this time period. I guess that's kind of how we have to put it right now, because we're not sure exactly how long this will last. And so we continue with great interviews with great professionals around our area, and I will talk you up as much as I can, Sheriff Sloop, because Sheriff Sloop is on the phone with me. And the reason I'm talking to Sheriff Sloop is because I wanted to make sure that I put the stories out there of our first responders. If you've been hearing us, you heard us talk to the Butler Ambulance, you heard us talk to the firefighters, and now I want to talk to Sheriff Sloop about what the police officers go through. And so, Sheriff Sloop, thank you very much for joining me for the next few minutes. I do appreciate your time.
That's my pleasure, Tracy.
And I know that I've said this to all the first responders. I know you aren't necessarily the spokesperson for every single person out there, but I wanted to get the perspective of what officers are going through at this time. And so, and also in this conversation, I want to bring up domestic abuse situations and exactly what are people supposed to do during this time. But let me first get to your department. What have you changed or adjusted since this COVID-19 scenario has started?
Well, we've made some mandatory changes for personal protection when any of the deputies come in contact with someone from the public or anyone, actually. They're to wear their face mask, of course, wearing gloves and eye protection. The distancing is also very important. We are testing everyone. We're asking questions if they have a cough, a fever, or any respiration issues. And we're taking a thermal temperature of them to make sure that there's no spike in temperature before they even come into the building.
Now, that's coming into the building. So what my curiosity is, when you're out there doing your job, so let's just say that there's a stop that you have to make, a vehicle stop. What is it are you doing during that time then? Are you still able to do everything you just mentioned, or is that protocol different?
So the police departments, I'm sure, are still making these traffic stops for violators. I mean, they're not just letting anybody go free. I would imagine with great certainty that the police departments that are making these traffic stops are taking all precautions when approaching the vehicle as they normally would anyway. And, of course, there is a distance thing with between the car door, the window, of course, and the officer, and the way they stand, where they stand, and how they accept the documents. Are they wearing their protective equipment? I don't know, because, you know,
sure.
I'm not out there
mm-hmm.
with them, of course. But I'm sure they're all encouraged to practice these safe steps when approaching a car.
So being the sheriff's office, when are people allowed to come in, or are they not supposed to come in? Or, you know, what are your rules now for that? Because I would assume you're deemed essential, obviously, you know, being the sheriff's office. But when are people allowed and not allowed to come into your office?
So what we've done for our license to carry, because the Commonwealth has said that the PICS, which is the Pennsylvania Instant Check System, says that, hey, we're an essential service, and PICS, I was going backwards on
That's
that.
Okay, yeah.
The gun dealers, the sheriffs, and all other law enforcement use PICS to find out if someone is prohibited from owning a gun, having a gun, through their criminal history, their domestic violence history, juvenile history, mental health history, and military. So that's essential, so we're essential. So what we found out recently is the Commonwealth has said, look, anybody who has a license to carry March 19th on is now automatically good through May 30th. We receive many calls every day about what we're doing. A lot of people are buying guns, as you probably reported, and they want their license to carry. So we're allowing them to come in. We've moved our operations into the lobby. So once they're screened, they just walk around the corner into the lobby area. We have a lot of safe distance areas for everybody. Again, like, staff is wearing their protective equipment, and we are making sure that the applicants get their license to carry. Anybody who expired before March 19th, the same thing. We've reduced our operation hours from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. just to keep everything in short order, if you will, so that it's not an all-day thing, that we're just from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., people come in. We're doing, you know, 15 a day. Normally, on a regular day, we could be doing anywhere between 35 and 40 a day.
So are there other services that you're taking care of at this point, aside from firearms?
So thank you. Yes, of course, the PFAs from the domestic violence, they don't stop. We just had three or four in yesterday, and they are, you know, varying in nature and the issues that are surround each of those protection orders. Some are more serious than others, and of course, we still have to serve the defendant in those cases. And, you know, again, we have to do it with, you know, all the protections that we need to have done. A lot of, there's still some civil process that we have to get served, again, using the safety precautions. In general, the court processing has really slowed down. A lot of the issues that occur are done by video with prisoners in the jail. Certain offices only allow people to come in for emergency situations, and we receive all the mail, or I'm sorry, all the FedEx and UPS boxes that are leaving and coming, and each of the departments and agencies come to our center area to get those and retrieve those. So we're limiting the amount of people that actually even come into the building.
Are you able to speak on the prison, or would that be best for the warden in any kind of consideration to leave anyone out of the jail early?
Sure. You know, I do serve as chairman of the prison board, but Joe is actually a great person to talk to. We're not looking to get a mass exodus of people out of the prison. However, when the courts are doing their bench warrant court, or their Gagnon's court, and the judge feels that they're not going to be a risk, you know, he may choose to let them out. That is up to the court. But, you know, the prison's not asking the court to do a mass, get everybody out of here situation. And remember, most of these people have already been in the prison for an extended period of time, and those that are coming into the prison are quarantined for a minimum of 14 days. And to my knowledge, currently there are still no cases of anyone in the prison having these signs and symptoms that are related to COVID.
Okay. And so let me step back for a moment, because when you were talking about domestic situations, if I could ask a couple of questions there, because that is one of the topics I wanted to talk to you about in length a bit, because I'm wondering, what does a man or a woman, I know either, you know, sex could be in the position of being abused, but if they are in a domestic situation right now, and we're all supposed to stay at home, and we're all supposed to be on a lockdown of our own, if you will, what does a person do if a dangerous situation arises and they're at home?
Well, first of all, call 911 and get the law enforcement, the police agencies involved. If there is an assault, I'm confident that they will make the appropriate arrest to take the person out of the situation right away, and that the victim, if you will, needs to come in and file for a PFA. We're not telling people, stay home, don't file PFAs. You know, protection from abuse orders are still a very important part of our lives, unfortunately, that we need those types of protections for the victims and sometimes their families from the predator, if you will.
If a situation is quite serious, is there anything that you advise woman, but a man could do the same thing, that you advise that they could do if they aren't able to call 911? I've heard many stories where, you know, the phone isn't available, or they just don't have the space, if you will, to be able to call for help. Are they able to get out of the house? Are they able to, like, give a code word to someone? What are those things that you recommend if somebody is able to get out of the house to go to a store somehow?
Sure. I mean, once they get out of the house and they go to their neighbor, if I don't know how close they'd be to their police agency or someone they trust, to call 911 to get the police to respond. I'm, again, confident in saying that these types of issues are those issues that the police will respond to instead of generally trying to handle by phone. Because I believe the police understand the serious nature of domestic cases and would make those a priority in response.
I'm sorry I don't have the story right in front of me, but I know my husband and I were discussing a story recently where, if I understand it right, and a woman had called 911. It wasn't in our area. And she was, in a sense, ordering a pizza, quote unquote, and then the 911 operator caught on very quickly and was able to help her. Is that something that you advise people, whether it be ordering pizza, but is there any kind of conversation you can have with somebody on 911 that those in the household may not understand the conversation, but the 911 operator would?
Yeah, I think that could be a Steve Beishaus question or Rob McClafferty from 911.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they've experienced those types of calls or not. People acting, sounding weird might throw a red flag up. It may, how that conversation goes can go so many different ways. That's really a good question. We try to always just go to the plain language, but I understand what you're saying, that if they're standing near and you're on the phone pretending you're talking to someone, how do you indicate that, look, I need help, send help? You start talking crazy, weird. I don't know, because you got to remember, they may send a police officer when they need to send two.
Right. Okay.
So you're
okay.
Putting someone. Yeah. So, I mean, we always say plain language. Just say what it is, and the police will respond appropriately. When you get someone that might say, "I'm ordering a pizza," and they're really weird, and they say, "You want to go check on this person," and a single police officer goes to that house, and next thing you know, they're in a full blown fight with whoever and whatever. That is super dangerous, I would think, for the police officer, not having immediate backup either, possibly, depending in the location, in this county especially.
So it's crucial for us to make sure that people know that your office, Sheriff Mike Sloop is on the phone with me, but your office is still working. And so if people need you, they can get a hold of you.
Sure. I will tell you that because we basically, we do service the courts, we do warrants, things like that. We're basically a steady daylight job with some on-call time and overtime issues because we had people in the hospital that we have to watch. But we did ask for some voluntary furloughs. With the amount of staff that I do have, we don't need, 31 people sitting here, in essence, twiddling their thumbs. I mean, we can find things to do. We train constantly, but yet I still can't. I don't think it's right that I got 31 people sitting here not really doing a whole lot. So
right.
We did get some voluntary furloughs, subject to call when needed, and the guys really stepped up, and we have about 10 guys off right now, and clerical staff.
Sheriff Sloop, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go
okay.
ahead.
You're good.
I wanted to ask you a couple questions that I've asked the other first responders as well. And the way I posed it is, I know you're all professionals and you're all going to do your job and you're not going to back away from your job, but you all are human as well. And all of us have been uprooted and just life has turned around on us and for different reasons. And so I want to ask you, when you're dealing with your job in what you do and your coworkers that are working or those that are furloughed, how do you deal with that emotionally and mentally? Because you do have a job that you have to go to work. You can't just stay home and do it from your living room. So how do you deal with that, being a human being?
Sure. And there's really, I think, two sides to this. One being the boss and having to look for people to say, hey, you can't work right now because of this pandemic. I've been sheriff for 11 years, and never once did I ever think that we would have to reduce staffing because of a crisis like this. Because normally in a crisis, we stand ready, we're ready to go, we have full staff to help any agency that needs it, and that's not the case. So it's very hard. I do try to stay in touch with the staff that is off. I've called them at least twice each, personally, asked if they need anything. Of course, we care about them. They're great people. Just checking in on them. When I send out emails, to the staff, I tell them, look, there's help out there if you're stressed out. Of course, I'm always here for them, to talk and talk things out. It's a stress thing, and everybody deals with stress differently. And having to have that open door to their needs and things, are very important. And we do have this employee assistance program that if they are that bad, that this program is available to them. But staying in contact, keeping them informed of what I know about what's going on is also very important. But more important than that is listening to them, listening to their concerns, their thoughts, what's going on in their minds that, you know, concerns them, and trying to keep them at those concerns at bay with everything that we're doing. And we reach out to other partners to say, what are you doing? Or, you know, and I'm trying to think, are we doing everything we can to keep them safe? And, you know, knock on wood, we are. And I'm really glad for that. And for the, you know, collaboration and the partnerships that we've garnered over the last few weeks and months, that that we're doing everything that we need to be doing.
What do you need from the community, or what could you use? I know right now folks are trying to order food, or they're trying to give masks. Do you need N95 masks, or is that not the masks that you need? Like, what do you need from the community that we could help you out with?
Sure. You know, let's start off straight off is prayers for our community and the country, 100%. And second, of course, is everybody needs to do their part with the social distancing. And yes, now they're saying wear your mask, because before it was just the people that had the COVID were the ones supposed to wear it. Okay, now everybody's supposed to do it. You do your distancing and be respectful. That is a number one. Number two, again, what I'm talking about partners, we have Sam's Club, Walmart, the one of our vendors. In fact, I just looked at an email today. Anna Marie's Winery is providing lunch pizza for us today. Dylan McCandless, King and Colter Graham, pizzas last Friday. So, you know, the community is so wonderful. And I just heard today the city received the delivery of some water and things. The community is wonderful. And we can't thank them enough for thinking of all of us, not just the sheriff's office, but all the police departments and other agencies that, you know, these people's hearts are filled with wanting to help. And I'd say to the community, just keep doing what you're doing. It's so much appreciated. You have no idea. And we thank you over and over again.
Well, I will say on behalf of the community that we appreciate what you're doing, and police officers out there, your entire department, with Sheriff Mike Sloop on the phone with me. I just wanted to take a moment just to say thank you for being out there, because even though you do have some furloughed or waiting to come back to work or on call or you know, whatever individual situations would be, it's still tough and that's stressful. And so I applaud you for what you're doing for your staff, and thank you for being out there in the community.
Thanks, Tracy. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk with you.
Thank you so much, and we appreciate your time, and we'll just stay in touch. Sheriff Mike Sloop on the phone with me. Thank you so much.